As I think will have become clear at the last panel, these are not only contentious, but in many ways fairly tricky issues to think about. What we want to do in this session is keep the discussion of some of these controversies going, but also broadening out slightly. And we have three presentations. First, Sonia Livingston from the LSE, who's going to talk about children online, consumers or citizens, and that will include some notes on the question of media literacy. But then we're also going to ask about what children actually consume and why, and going to look at the complex factors lying behind that. And in the place of Dr. Sharon Bowden, her colleague, Chris Pohl, will talk about their research project on children's fashion consumption. And then we're going to take sort of a step back and have the benefit of Professor Ekström from the Center of Consumer Science in Sweden to sort of highlight some ethical issues raised by this debate from a Scandinavian perspective. So first, Sonia Livingston on children online.
Thank you very much, Mike. Okay, so I want to shift our attention then to thinking about the children's involvement in the media, and particularly the new media and the internet, as a way of thinking about new opportunities, new ways for children and young people to be consumers. And I'll just start with some context for my thinking about this and then give you some ideas of some empirical work that I've been doing. I just start with the observation that the terms children, media and change all occasion moral panics, as Steve used the term earlier. They're a kind of inflammatory combination, and reading the press recently, it seems to me that what's happening with children and the internet and possible changes to childhood, to safety, to privacy and so on, is getting a lot of attention. So we have this sense that in relation to the new media, we're on a kind of precipice of change, that childhood is being changed and is not anymore what it used to be, perhaps. And when I think about what changes people are anxious about, they tend to be changes to do with the blurring of boundaries that were once separate. So we worry about the way in which education and entertainment come together, work and home come together, public and private, and I think here, as we're talking about that blurring, the sense of the consumer and the citizen. Perhaps these were once separate roles, now they're blurring, and again we worry about how consumers and citizens, whether people can be consumers as citizens, are children developing into consumers or citizens, are these opposed terms. So the new media seem to be blurring some of our boundaries, and they're surrounded with a considerable amount of hype, which is sometimes optimistic and sometimes pessimistic in relation to children and the internet. The overwhelming story of the last few months has been very pessimistic about risks and threats, rather than, as it could be, and perhaps also should be, a more optimistic debate also about what we want for children online, and whether what we want for them online is something that is to do with their future role as citizens, or perhaps also their future role as consumers. In my brief remarks today, I want to reflect on three research projects empirical research projects that I've been completing recently, which one family is in the internet, which is a very detailed ethnographic study of 30 families and how children are going online. UK Children Go Online, which has been qualitative, and I'll reflect on today, but now has a survey out in the field, which I hope will put some numbers to the range of ways in which children are making use of the internet. In the UK today. And one public connection which comes under the Cultures of Consumption project, which is looking at the ways in which people see themselves to be using the media as a way of sustaining connection with the public world, or the way perhaps in which they use the media to distance themselves or separate themselves off from that public world. When you talk to parents or teachers or children about the new media environment, the phrase that comes out first and most often is the idea of young people as the experts. This is perhaps the first domain, or this is anyway a very significant domain, in which children are valued as the experts, valued for the knowledge that they have and a knowledge that they're held to have beyond that of their parents and teachers. So they talk about themselves as the internet generation. It's a kind of slogan that they carry around. We are the generation of computers. And they think of themselves very often as pioneers in a new environment, communication environment that many adults simply don't understand. And I think there's some very interesting things to be said, therefore, about the way in which young people are being positioned as experts, valued as experts, given a kind of status or standing in the home and in school that they may not have had before. And it raises a set of questions about whether that brings with it new rights and new responsibilities, together with that status as being the internet experts. So do they gain the new rights to express themselves online? Do they gain the right to participate in certain kind of fora where previously they'd been excluded? Do they gain the rights to have access to any kind of knowledge online, or do we want to constrain what kind of knowledge they may have access to? At the same time, we ask questions about their responsibilities that perhaps we didn't think about before. Children now have the potential to gain access to commercial sites or pornographic sites or political sites that perhaps were not previously available to them. And so we must ask questions also about whether children, as players in this new communication environment, have some responsibilities or should be contained or constrained in various ways. So sometimes when we worry about the internet and what it might be bringing, we worry about the way in which children seem to be throwing away traditional values and rushing out there into this new and perhaps dangerous world, and how should that be managed? But children, in my research, are full of stories about how they've had to teach their parents and how they've had to teach their teachers and how they can get around what their parents and their teachers try to do whenever they do try to contain them, because they are the experts. I want to put that notion of children as the new media experts in a little context, because I think new media are arriving at a point when childhood is also changing. And a lot of our anxieties about children and the internet are really anxieties about childhood, not so much anxieties about the internet particularly. So that sense that historians and sociologists of childhood tell us, that children are in some ways getting older younger and in some ways staying younger longer, are changes to do with childhood. But the internet plays into those changes. So children are getting older, younger. People are talking about children's greater access to sexual knowledge or consumer opportunities, access to all kinds of adult knowledge that previously they didn't have. The internet is a mediator of that. Children staying younger, longer, that sense of children being increasingly or for longer in their life, economically dependent, longer in education than they were in previous generations, staying at home longer, as every parent complains about. And so has a lot more time at home to make use of the internet to become precisely that kind of expert. I think earlier someone talked about changes in the family, and one of the other striking things, I think, is that the internet arrives and gets debated at a point at which the family is also changing. And perhaps the change we would identify over the 20th century is the shift from a fairly hierarchical notion of family with more authoritative parents and rules and roles strictly circumscribed for children. Of course, this is highly idealistic, but still there is a sense that there is a democratizing move within the family, and that children and parents are more on a par when they come to negotiate what their relative rights, responsibilities, and roles might be. And I think that's posing parents with some very considerable problems when they are when they come to regulate the way in which their children have access to the internet, because they are, on the one hand, become these more democratic parents, allowing children their own opinions, interests, pleasures, and so forth. And on the other hand, they are once again being called upon rather carefully to regulate what kind of online opportunities their children get access to. So that sense from the National Parenting Institute of parents' struggle over food is also being played out over media, and particularly about the internet, that parents are struggling to guide and to manage their children's access to this new communication environment. And this access, this struggle is not helped by the fact that in this arena at least, parents feel themselves to be much less the experts than do their children. Perhaps parents do know about nutrition, but they don't know about the internet very often. One more contextual factor that I just want to put around this is that sense of what children might be doing if they were not spending so much time with the media and the internet. And one of the very striking stories about childhood over recent decades is the story about children's decreasing access to public spaces and decreasing freedoms in being able to engage in non-mediated forms of leisure. So, as parents tell it, and as children often tell it, there's a kind of retreat to a media-rich home, a media-rich home which is supposedly safe, which doesn't involve the dangers of roads and strangers and so on. And the irony, of course, is that many of those dangers that are out there are now being rediscovered on the internet. So the argument I want to make, or want to put to you, is the idea of children having an extended childhood, being at home for longer, and that the leisure portion of their childhood being increasingly spent at home rather than outside, and therefore the media fill the gap in their time, in their space. Their bedrooms are now defined by the media and in their interests. And within that, I think what a lot of research is finding and is showing is the way in which children are using the media, and in my research the children are using the internet, to experiment and play and negotiate their identities with the media resources. I think going back to a point that was made earlier. If children are not free to experiment outside on the streets as much as they were, they're much more free to experiment with identities online and with the media. And even to be naughty, even to transgress, even to mess around with these boundaries and manipulate what it is that their parents think they're doing. So this is the area where the naughtiness of childhood, I think, is also being played out, as well as some of the freedoms. So that sense of the project of the self, of the child's responsibility to develop an identity that's coherent, that's cool, and so forth, is one that is very much, I think, now drawing on media resources and increasingly drawing on online resources. So many things that perhaps were once offline are now increasingly online, and children are taking up many of these opportunities for pleasure, for privacy. I've written elsewhere about the way in which, as children's privacy is very often curtailed in the offline world, they're using the internet as a way of finding private spaces, whether it's through blogs or emails or hiding their files or whatever, but they're finding online spaces for privacy, and perhaps also for participation. So I think it's rather easy when looking at qualitative work on how children use the internet to come to a story of children as the drivers of this area of change. The children are the pioneers in a newly or increasingly individualized world where the media are integrally entwined with developing identities, social pleasures, relationships, and so forth. And so that sense of the children are in many ways pushing it. Mobile phone stories, perhaps, a typical example of how neither the industry nor the adult population quite anticipated and understood how mobiles would be taken up for many of the things that are very important for young people. And they became the driver of a market. And they did so for reasons of wanting control over their communication, to build and develop certain kinds of peer networks, to be able to manage privacy in their communication in a way that isn't possible. We used to use the telephone in the hall of our house and everyone could listen in. So in some ways we could say they're the drivers. In some ways if one wants to be sensitive to what children have to say and to listen carefully to their voices and their pleasures, curiously and for me problematically, one ends up telling a very similar story to the story that the industry tells about the media savvy child. And I find this a kind of problematic paradox that I think we need to do some more thinking about. Children would love us to celebrate them as the media savvy kids, but many are very uneasy at the coincidence between that argument and the one that the media industry tells. Okay, so perhaps then we need some caution as well, rather than simply celebrating the ways in which children are media savvy. There are four kinds of cautions that I want to draw out of my research before I close. The first is to say something about the way in which of course, commercial pressures are very much shaping the new media environment. The opportunities that children are finding online are shaped by some very specific commercial and business imperatives. Children are being provided with certain kinds of places and other kinds of places, places which are branded in particular ways, which offer some forms of participation and not others. As has been also said earlier, there are some very strong conformity pressures operating on children within the peer group, which curtail this supposedly free process of individualisation. I do want to say something about children's understanding and competence to play and experience this new world of communication. They are keen to get into it and they relish it, but that doesn't necessarily mean they very thoroughly understand the world they find themselves in. And then to return to this doubt that to consume is not to participate, that consumers and citizens are somehow opposed, I just want to say something about the question of how children see them or might be using new media opportunities to participate, and I'm feeling rather pessimistic about that. Okay, so just to say something brief about the commercial pressures and the way in which the online environment is being shaped. What's new about the internet is that it's a story of abundance rather than scarcity. All our previous stories about media broadcasting have been often stories about managing scarce resources and deciding what are the appropriate and selected opportunities to put towards children. In the internet, there are very few barriers to production. There are all kinds of sites, all kinds of opportunities. And so a very significant new challenge of evaluating that content. And deciding what's reliable and what's trustworthy. So the media literacy issue, I think, is very considerably more challenging in the online environment than it has been in the offline environment. And once again, just to reiterate the point, if children are the experts, then one has to ask who are their guides in this new media environment. And very often their guides are the commercial bodies that are creating the sites rather than others. So if you ask children what kinds of information do you trust, very often their criteria about professionalism and about brands and about, you know, the kinds of sites I've put here, which are fabulously elegant and expensively produced and very slick and very cool. But they have some downsides, and one which I think children find quite hard to spot is the way in which they're very often walled gardens. Harry Potter doesn't genuinely follow children's interest in fantasy adventure and take them through resources for fantasy and adventure, insofar as it doesn't take them to Lord of the Rings, for example, which for children is in the same category, but when you look at it closely, it's a branded site. It is working hard to keep them on that site, to look at the advertising on that site, and not to follow children's interests in the way that perhaps it avowedly says it does. If children are found to Manchester United, they'll go to the Manchester United site, but that site will never take them to the Arsenal site or the Spurs site, or, you know, if they're football fans, maybe they want to look at other teams, they won't get a chance on the commercial sites. And these brands, as we know, the brands online are the brands offline, and so there's increasingly a kind of seamless environment. I was slightly shocked the other day to hear children's BBC Online describe Blue Peter as a brand. I'm sure that's standard, but I remember when it was a programme, and now it's, you know. The BBC sees it as a brand. There's a blurring between what's commercial and what's public, and the language of commercialism, as it's found even in the public sector. And if adults are finding this confusing, I think the children will be too. So just on that question of media literacy, I think if you listen to beyond the claim that we are all the experts, children are the internet generation, in fact there is a more nuanced story to be told, and children will bring it out. There are a series of different